So here we are, the second shir on the Dharm. I just want to add a hera from last week. Because last week we saw the Rambam about the different sugim of nedarim. And but in fact there are other sugim, or at least those sugim have to be unpacked. Those sugim have to be unpacked. The Rambam talks about nidre isur, right? You take a neder and you declare something to be usur to you. There's something which the Torah did not forbid, like meat or wine. And you, I think up there, the top shelf, those old-looking gemaras, there's a nedarim up there. So you say wine is usur to me. You take wine is usur to me forever. Wine is usur to me for 30 days. Meat is usur to me.
If you had wine is usur, that would be being a
A nazir? No, in other words, you could be a nazir. A nazir is a very specific type of set of nidarim, and because its halachot are specific, it has a whole different mesechta to itself because it has specific. But a nazir is a kind of very specialized subcategory of neder, where you have to bring a korban at the end, and it's viewed as this both positive and negative thing simultaneously. But if you don't want to be a nazir, right? You don't mind going to the cemetery. You don't mind getting a haircut, shaving your beard, trimming your beard. But you take a neder against wine, specific neder against wine, but. In fact, there's also, just like you have a neder to create a lotase, there's also nidrei mitzvah. And the Rambam had talked about nidarim of hektish. You make a neder that you're going to give this much to Beis HaMikdash, or to the synagogue, or to the charity, or you're going to beat your noder this cow, or your noder a cow, your noder a korban. You can also make a neder for mitzvot. And we know this idea, like in a conventional life, this idea that if you take on a good practice, something which is beyond the letter, the strict letter of the law, but is a preferable practice, perhaps a chumrah, and you do it three times, through the repetition of behavior, it creates a chazakah that you are now somebody that does this, and it creates a kind of neder. It's tantamount to a neder, either through practice, or you can verbally declare that you're taking on this neder. A few years ago, my kid went through this very brief period, all too short, of being inspired by the Neo-Hasidic revival, and he wanted a gartel. Someone told him that he wanted a gartel. So look, your kid, halavai, all our kids should, that should be our biggest problem. Your kid wants to be a Neo-Hasidic. So I went and I bought him a gartel. I was surprised at how much you think a gartel costs. See, gartel mashu pashut. What? Yeah, it's a good garnish, it's nothing. So I bought him a gartel and he wore it, for davening, for a period of time, and then he gave it up. But when I gave it to him, I said to him, better say bli neder. You're trying it out. You're experimenting.
Maybe that's why he only did
there are worse things. So there are worse things that kids experiment with than wearing a gartel. So I said to him, you should say bli neder, because if you'll keep it up, so then it's a praiseworthy practice. It's not without. It's not some. Wearing gartel is not some, quote-unquote weird, antinomian Hasidic practice, right? It actually has precedent in halacha. The fact that we don't wear a gartel is a kula that we rely on. Rashi explains it like our belts are the same as a gartel, and even if you don't wear a belt, you wear, let's say wearing like elastic sweatpants or something. So the waist itself is serves the halachic function of creating this division between the upper and the lower for the purposes of tznius and davening, as opposed to like somebody who's wearing a nightshirt, right? So that if you kind of like looked here, like you can see all the way down, which is problematic for tznius. So say it bli neder. So maybe if I would have taken it as a neder, I'd still be doing it today.
Are you going to talk about the makor of this concept that if you do something three times?
We will. We're not going to do it in this parak, but perhaps we'll do it when we finish this. You were here last week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but you sat over there, so I'm confused.
Actually, I sat right here.
That's why I'm confused. Usually you sit
actually,
over
I
there.
Actually, I sat there, right.
But our parak deals with... Our parak deals with Hatarat Nedarim. And I mentioned last week, not the Hatarat Nedarim that we do kind of pro forma for Rosh Hashanah, but a real Hatarat Nedarim, a real Hatarat Nedarim. The Torah says that if you need to really make a Hatarat Nedarim, you can, the Torah doesn't say, Chazal say, that you can go to a Chacham, which we don't really have so much of anymore, or you can go to three Hedyotot, three regular old-fashioned rabbis. And it's not, when you really do a Hatarat Nedarim, it's not like what it looks like on Erev Rosh Hashanah, where you just mumble some mumbo-jumbo, which you may or may not understand, but certainly at the speed it's being said, nobody can understand it. And then they kind of wave their magic wand, mutterlach, 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 and then it's all scot-free. There's a mechanism by which the Hatarat Nedarim, the Hatarat Nedarim works.
Another question. Are we going to end up using this peanut butter thing as an example?
I didn't want to mention any specific cases of anybody who wants to.
You can go ahead and use it because you were,
David made a Hatarat Nedarim a few years ago to eat peanuts on. To get out of peanuts being kitniot. Not to get rid of kitniot, but that peanuts should not be kitniot. So we did an actual Hatarat Nedarim.
It was not mumbo jumbo.
It was definitely not mumbo jumbo.
Interrogated me.
Yes. But
do you put peanut butter on matzo now? It's amazing.
I can think of all types of things I would use the adjective amazing to describe, but peanut butter on matzo is not amazing.
Can you do an actual Hatarat Nedarim then to get rid of kitniot?
One should not do that, but that's a different topic.
What about Minhag Yisrael?
Yes, we Minhag is force, but as a question of whether here in this case whether or not, in other words, peanuts may not bechlal be kitniot. And anyway, it's a longer conversation. So a person who has charata, who has regret about a neder he has made or accepted upon himself, can go to a bezdin or go to a chacham, and he can be mashil. He can ask to be released, to be mutar lahatir the neder. But the chacham or the betin has to find a petach. So this idea of a petach, an opening, a pretense by which to show that the neder was taken under pretenses that we can now allow to we now allow him to get out of it.
Well, that was the example that I had remembered. I had asked if my rabbi wasn't able to do the Hatarat Nedarim, if I could eat peanuts, because I had remembered eating peanuts as a young child, and then later I had stopped. So he said, the fact that you, if I had never eaten peanuts, that would actually be easier. Right. Then I could just say it was, but the fact that I had at one point eaten them and then stopped meant that I was taking it upon myself.
In David's case, like so many of us, cases of Bali Tshuva, where, in other words, on one level, our minhagim, how long you wait between meat and milk, eating kitnio, doing eating or not eating other things on Pesach. There are all types of minhagim and customs that take on the flavor of Isur. There was a long standing custom amongst Polish Yidden, although not amongst Galicianas, not to eat garlic on Pesach. Not because garlic is kitniot, but because the garlics themselves were all what?
They were dried in the field, like with the round, mixed up with the...
With flour?
Yeah.
No, they were often shipped in barrels with flour, and the flour would... I think the flour was there as like an absorbing agent.
Similar to fish, which was also stored... It was also
right.
In like a...
So, in other words, to keep the moisture out from... Because it would rot... So just to, so because garlic was often hung around with so there was a chumrah not to eat garlic bichlal. So I was a young bal tshuva. I didn't know anything. My parents were mosa and efesh. They kashered the house for me, as I've told you many times. My parents hadn't kept kosher. My grandparents hadn't kept kosher. But so I said to my parents, you can't have garlic on Pesach. What did I knew nothing, right? I thought like eating garlic on Pesach was like eating chametz on Pesach. It's all the same thing. What?
How How did you learn about
it? Because I read it in one of these silly books that, you know, lists all of the dinim of the chumras, and since it doesn't differentiate and say this is an obscure minug which is not so widespread today and blah blah blah, right? But I said, Can he? So that my mother, who had like just kashered the house for Pesach for the first time, we had started keeping kosher. They kashered the house on Erev Purim. So I remember the Chabadnikim that came to do it. They brought a big basket of humantashen with them as a gift. And then a month later, we had kashered the house for Pesach. And my mother said, oh my God, how did I realize this? We could have eaten treif for one more month. Just started clean from scratch. So I said, you can't eat garlics. So she said, that's it. To hear it, so I called my rabbi because I don't want to. I'm going to be eating like, you know, it's like eating chazer treif. So he said to me, "Are you such an idiot? You know, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know." So somebody that would accept this chumrah upon himself. So we're talking about cases of like disconnect gebrox, right? So gebrox is also a chumrah amongst the chassidim, you can't say it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. But if you come from a family where there are Nicker Brooks, you know, you're kind of stuck with it. You're kind
of
stuck with it.
Some of it have like a very, not a very strong basis. Like, I'll give you an example. I went to high school with a guy. Their family didn't eat meat on Pesach.
Didn't eat meat?
Only chicken. No meat.
No beef.
And they sort of investigated what it was. It says the family came from this little shtetl in Europe where they didn't have a shochet. They had a shochet to do chickens. They didn't have a shochet to do meat. So they didn't have any Pesach. No, so the shochet would come before Rosh Hashanah and it would shecht. So Rosh Hashanah they had meat.
Right. And then when it ran out, it was...
Pesach was too busy to get to that shtetl. There's no shochet.
Right, so this is a minhag ta'ut.
The question is...
This is a minhag ta'ut. So the minhag ta'ut is... A minhag ta'ut is not binding. But gebrox is not a minhag ta'ut, but it's and if you're from a family that doesn't eat gebrox, you're kind of stuck with it. I mean, in extenuating circumstances, presumably there are ways around it. But I mean, every it's easy to know. Now they sell non gebrox matzah balls. Yeah. It's like, you know, so it's a family minhag that goes back. You know, in our religion, if something only goes back 300 years, you think it's like, you know, Johnny come lately, right? But you know, and not only you should be stuck with it, you should feel this is my family. We should revel in our family minhagim. We should feel proud of them. We should feel like it's only the Sfardim and the Yekis that, like, you know, feel this, you know, sense of this is a defining part of your identity. But the rest of us Ashkenazim, we like feel like if we could get out of anything, we would do. So all of, but a Baal Tshuva who's not bound by family minhagim, because you have a vague sense of where you were from in Europe, and you can say, well, the minhag hamakom there was like this, and maybe when you return, you should try to recapture the authentic faith. But in a lot of cases where it's a few generations, I don't even know exactly where my family came from in Europe, only vaguely. So I started keeping kosher. How long do you have to wait between meat and milk? So I wanted to be more Catholic than a pope. I said, I'm going to wait 6 full hours, 6 hours times 60 minutes, right? So, okay, that's not from the force of a binding family minhag. I should have decided I was Dutch or something.
Do you eat geese and tivet?
Oh, that's an important minhag we should all try to do. Yeah, eating geese and Chodesh Tevet. Yeah.
Who eat geese? Not to refrain.
What?
The minhag is to eat them, not, or to not eat them?
Not eat
them.
To eat?
Well, the minhag is like, you know, first you shouldn't shech them. But then
no,
it was, you know,
in Kislev. In Kislev, you eat the geese. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because in other words, the minhag was to eat the geese was very popular. We're really off subject now, but we should really like behave because we have all these new people in the shir before they realize how much batala goes on. So the minhag in Europe was, you know, geese were much more common than they are today. Geese, ducks, things like that. These are now luxury items. But geese, where every home had geese hanging around. You'd eat the eggs. You'd eat the quills were used for safrut. The down was used for pillows and for blankets. But you'd fatten them up over the summer and the fall. And in Kislev, you would shecht them because it was too expensive to feed them during the winter. You'd shecht them in Kislev, and latkes, we think of latkes as a dairy meichel. You'd latkes with sour cream for Hanukkah. Latkes were bisari. Latkes were fried in the, not chicken fat, in the schmaltz, in the goose fat, right?
Because
we don't have access to goose fat, but latkes, and sometimes latkes were stuffed with, it was like a potato patty stuffed with meat, fried
like a burrito.
Fried in the schmaltz. It's only in America that latkes became a chalavi type thing.
Well, originally they were. The potatoes were new.
Potatoes had been around in Europe for a couple hundred years.
The original minhag was to eat fried things with dairy.
Right.
But that couldn't be done any sooner because nobody had
dairy.
Olive oil to cook it. The only thing you could ever cook was schmaltz.
Right.
But the original thing wasn't potatoes either. That was only a new world thing.
Potato, but by the 16th century, there was potatoes. By the time, you know, we think of Poland, there was potatoes. So Agnew actually writes about this in a few places. Making the latkes for Hanukkah being a bisari thing. So there's minog. So that's that. There's minog with a capital M, and there's minog with a lot. There's a minog that women don't do malacha in the half hour while the Hanukkah candles are burning. That's a minog with a capital M. And then there's a minog to eat sufganiyot on Hanukkah. That is not a halachic minhag. There's no halachic force. One should not feel religiously compelled to eat sufganiyot on Hanukkah. Okay. Yeah, but they have already. They had last week in the store sufganiyot already.
As soon as Sukkot is over.
I remember you can only get them. Okay. So one way is to find a petach to say, if I would have known the following, I would not have taken the neder. And that's the case that our Mishnah is describing. Another type of charata that you can have about nederim is about the manner in which the neder was taken. And this is reflected in the Rambam, and it actually also plays off against what we saw in the Rambam last week. Sometimes nidarim were a kind of weapon, a kind of either rhetorical weapon or actual agent of revenge, that a neder would be made out of anger.
I'll never buy in your store or something.
I make a neder, I'll never buy in your store again, right? How many times do people get, I'll never fly El Al again, right? Right? This is the last time I'm going to, right? You're angry at someone. You take a neder out of kasa, things like that. So if you say, that can also be a petach, about the way that the neder was made. But the neder was made because I was acting out of anger. Anger is a bad thing, right? Nekama, revenge is a bad thing. So that can also be a kind of opening that the charata, the regret, the remorse that you feel about the neder might come from a different place. So look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, potchin la'adam b'chvod aviv v'imo. You can make a petach, you can create this opening for releasing the neder on the grounds of kibud avim.
The garlic.
If I take in a neder, right? Look at what I'll say Rashi, but again, I remind you that this is not Rashi. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, potchin la'adam b'chvod aviv v'imo. She'omer lo, ilu hayita yodea she'omrim al avicha. Ilu hayita yodea. She'omrim al avicha. Oy lo la'av shagadal ben rasha kaze shehu parutz b'nedarim. She'ken rishayim darkan lindor kida amrinan la'ayel. So somebody takes a neder. He takes a neder, he's never going to drink wine. He takes a neder, he'll never eat meat. He takes a neder, he who knows what. So then he regrets having taken this neder. But on what grounds can you? He's now inconvenienced by the neder. But inconvenience alone is not necessarily grounds to be matir neder. And again, the Chachamim need this petach. They can't just wave a magic wand. What's the petach to be matir this neder? Okay, so he regrets having made this neder, but mere inconvenience is not enough. So you say, oh, if you'd known when you took this neder, it would have reflected poorly on your parents. It would have been an affront to your parents. Why? What's the affront to his parents' honor? That you are now known as a neder maker, a loose neder maker. Now remember, last week we saw in the Rambam that a neder can be a very powerful and positive tool to rein in excesses of personality.
What?
You can take a neder and use it for good, right? Whether it has the halachic force of a neder or it's just a kind of promise one makes to himself, the idea is the same as the examples we gave last week. You take a neder, I'm really going to exercise this year. I'm really going to cut out the junk food, right? I'm really going to work on this bad midah. I'm really going to work on this bad midah. Right? And I'm not going to, I'm really not going to talk in shul. Right? I take a neder that I'm not going to talk in shul. Right? Because even the points in davening where you're allowed to talk. Right? But I'm not, because I want to curtail myself. Right? So those are nedarim that can be marshaled for positive effect. Right? But nedarim can also be the kinds of weapons of anger and jealousy and revenge and all of those very, very negative midot.
Is that what I'm talking about, or just the fact that if you use them too quickly with an end of violating them, that becomes a problem?
So it's necessary. Here the pseudo Rashi does not say it's because you take nidarim and you violate them, but merely being somebody that takes nidarim loosely, even if you fulfill the neder, is not a positive character trait. Certainly if you make nedarim left and right and are unable to fulfill them, that's certainly no good. But even just being a loose taker of nedarim is not a positive thing. And it reflects badly on your parents. So this, the way Chazal viewed nedarim, you know, the power of speech, this is one of the things that I didn't mention last week that I wanted to. The nedarim reflect this notion in halacha about the power of speech, that our words have effect. It has halachic effect. It has psychological effect. It has all types of things. That the words themselves constitute a kind of, not exactly tashmishe mitzvah, right? But to a certain degree they do. That our words themselves can't have halachic reality, create halachic reality. Now, just like the same idea in Hektish, which is a type of neder. You can take something, you can say, this pen, I mean this blue neder, this pen is Hektish. And you transform its status from chulin to Hektish. So if I then, you know, write shtei otiot with it, I'm over on Me'ila, because I've stolen from Beit HaMikdash, from the drop of ink that I used to jot down your phone number. That words can create halachic reality. So Nidarim create halachic reality. They create Isurim, they create obligations. So you shouldn't be so loose with your nedarim. Certainly, if you make a neder, you have to keep it. But even if you just are loose with nedarim, not in the kind of, as a tool the Rambam describes to fine-tune, you know, as a tool for personality fine-tuning. But you just shouldn't be loose with nedarim. And it reflects badly on the chinuch that you received at home if you're a loose nedarim taker. So the Beis Din says, Rabbi Elazar says, you go to Beis Din, he said, I made this neder, I'd like to be matirit. So they say to him, if you'd known that taking this neder would reflect badly on your parents, would you have taken it? So he says, I would not have taken it. So then that could be a petach, according to Rabbi Eliezer, to be matir the neder. The chachamim osrin. The chachamim say no. That is not a sufficient petach in order to be matir the neder.
Is the only example of where is it also an example where what you've taken nether about so upsets them? You took a nether, not the kilo, but if you have taken nether, not the garlic on Pesach, and your mother cooks with everything with garlic.
Ah, so no. So you'll see from the Hemshech of the Mishnah that that's not the case. This is not something that's directly affecting the parents. It's just the fact that you are now a nether taker to excess. Would be sufficient to create the petach, because the very fact that you took these types of nedarim reflects badly on you as a person, and if it reflects badly on you as a person, it reflects badly by extension on your parents. But the chachamim say
that, even if the person's parents aren't alive.
Yes, we're obligated in kibbun avim even after our parents are gone. It transforms itself, but obviously their good name and their reputation and their shem tov and what.
It's assuming he comes from a religious family, but if it's someone who's not so religious, and his parents weren't religious, and he just
the Mishnah certainly
flies off the handle things that he doesn't really know the meaning of.
The Mishnah certainly assumes that we're working within a religious society.
But in today's society, the majority of Jews are certainly not religious, don't know anything about halacha.
But that's not the reality in which the Mishnah is operating. That's not the reality in which the Mishnah is operating. The Mishnah knows that people sin, but they sin within a religious society, right? We talked about this many times. We talked about it last year. We learned the sugya of Tinok Shenishba, right? Raised by wolves, right? But Chazal were unaware of more than half of us. I don't know everybody's personal biography, but I know enough of you to know this. More than half of us are people grew up what's called colloquially Bali Tshuva. People that grew up outside of the prism of Torah and mitzvot and tradition. Chazal didn't know about us. Right? Chazal knew about people that were Balei Tshuva because they were religious people. The whole idea of being a religious person is a modern construct.
They were
people who lived within the halachic system. And they sinned.
Yeah.
It happens. And the tshuva is repairing that sin. But that Bali tshuva in our sense of somebody who bechlal never heard of an aleph, never heard of a bet, doesn't know the difference between Shabbos and Shatnez, and suddenly, NCSY or Chabad or this Jewish experience or who knows what grabs them and they discover the truth and they come back. And
so you have a new Bali tshuva, and he realizes that when he wasn't religious, he made all these statements.
Okay, that would be obviously different if you.
So then he would have a petach.
Yeah, presumably, like because he didn't know about the dinim of neder, right? So a neder has to be taken with knowledge. It can't be,
What if a person is a Baal Tshuva and his parents are dead set against him being a Baal Tshuva?
That's it. This is way far off. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Potchin La'adam B'chvod Aviv Imo V'chachamim Osrin. Omer Rabbi Tzadok Ad Shepotchin Lo B'chvod Aviv Imo Yiftechu Lo B'chvod HaMakom. How do you read that line in the Mishnah? So Machlok is some of you had to read a lot in the Mishnah. What do you think it means?
Initially, I'm assuming God.
Well,
I assume it means you use God, honor of God before the honor of his parents. You can use that as a.
So that's what the Ran says. The Ran here says that just like Rabbi Eliezer is matir to use kibbud ave'em as a petach. If you would have known that you're taking this neder would cause embarrassment or shame to your parents, would you have taken it? No, I wouldn't have done that to my parents. Oh, so then we can let you off the hook. So Rabbi Tzadok says,
everything would buy that.
So you can also use kavod hamakom, and had we known kavod shemaim, meaning the honor of God. If you, had you known, you know, Chazal often connect kibud av ha'em and respect for God. Had you known that,
same as a shutaf in our
yes,
creation.
Had you known that your actions would have been an affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would you have taken the ned there? Certainly not. That's the way the Ran says it, but that's not the way that all the other Rishonim read it. The Rishonim read it as a kasha on Rabbi Eliezer. Wait a second. In other words, if you're going to let them off the hook, if you're going to let the guy off the hook because of the pretense of kibud av ha'em, which is something of a stretch after all. No, this Rabbi Eliezer is something of a stretch.
I mean, I'm, you know, I'm new to this, yeah, but like we're making this, at least according to the Rambam, we're making this assumption that every neder is bad. It doesn't say what the neder is about.
No. Not all the neder are bad, and there's a reason that he's coming to try to get. Somebody takes a neder and fulfills the neder and keeps to the neder, and.
But
and,
for some reason, he now wants to be mevatel it, and according to Eliezer, you can say kavara. Parents, regardless of, doesn't question here what kind of netter it is. He says, you come to Betin could say, oh, well, if you would have known that people are gonna say Baba Mises about you, even though you've made one netter in your life.
No, sir. So had you known that being a netter taker in this manner would be an affront to Shemayim.
But it's not an affront to Shemayim, it's not an affront to your parents. If you say, I'm gonna give extra tzedakah every day, and it's the only netter you've ever made in your life, why is this an affront to anybody? Well, later on, you decide
it
wasn't
the
good
idea. It has to be covered with Abayim.
Yeah, but the Mishnah and the Rashi, whoever, doesn't say I only in such and such a case. They're just making this assumption that kibud av ha'em is a good excuse.
I think the idea between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim is Rabbi Eliezer would say, I mean, he wouldn't accept this idea that the parents are like God in the sense that you would say, okay, if another problem for God is like objective. Thing. That amount of netherim is too many. You've taken five this year, you're over your limit, that's it. But for the parents, you could say it's subjective. Some parents might not have a problem with it, some would. My parents happen to particularly have a problem with this particular neder, or the particular amount of netherim that I've done. They view it as a problem. Other people might not, but I know my parents would, and therefore I need you to be mater. I wouldn't say God would, because God might, you can't say God would.
Not having read the rest of the Mishnah, you don't yet know why what you just said is incorrect.
Okay.
Hold on to your seats until we finish the Mishnah, and you'll see that there's two aspects here. And the first, the resha of the Mishnah about kibud av ha'em, is not talking about a neder that affects the life of the parents in any way whatsoever.
No,
and like Shalom said, it could be the parents are even dead.
No, talking about reflecting upon them. But you assume that they would that reflecting upon them is subjected to how they view you.
No. The neder in question can be anonymous to them. They just don't like the idea that you to be a neder taker in this manner is inherently a bad trait. And this, again, is the two-edged sword of nedarim. The Torah recognizes the existence of nedarim, and nedarim can be marshaled for halachic use. But to be a neder taker, the way we kind of have this kind of ambivalence about chumrah, and this is not a perfect comparison. The way that we have this kind of ambivalence about, at least in our community, and sometimes we do it with far too much cynicism, the ambivalence we have about chumras, right? We kind of like to operate under the cynical idea that all chumras are bad, right? Which is not true. First of all, many of the things that we do as normative law themselves are chumras. Chumras are a way of strengthening observance of mitzvot. They're a way of creating a safety net around possible avera, but if used to excess, it becomes a case of throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
There's no evidence. I mean, I should wait for the Mishnah, but there's no evidence.
Let's finish reading the Mishnah. So Rabbi Tzadok says. So why do you have to rely on kibud av ha'em? What about kavod ha'makom? Somebody who uses nedarim improperly, right, is also affronting God. Had you known you were affronting God, would you have made the neder? Certainly not, Your Honor. Im kain, ein nedarim. Now what that means has to be explained by the Gemara. That's the first question in the Gemara. But this probably means something like this.
If you're going to say that using the kavod ha'makom is going to be mevatel a neder, then every neder is mevatel.
Every neder would
Everybody be has God.
That's going back to what I'm saying, is that God might be If you're saying that God has a certain amount of what makes a person, you could say one nether a year is reasonable, but ten nether a month is too much. But if parents might have might be more subjective, in which case that's why I couldn't Rabbi Ezra. I imagine you would say the parents might have a different amount. God might have a more objective number that would be considered to be.
I think it's hafuch, but the same idea.
Modim chachamim l'Rabbi Eliezer, but the chachamim agree that you can use kibud avaim as a petach. B'davar shebeino levein aviv v'imo. If he takes a neder, he's never going to eat his mother's home cooking. If he takes the neder, that he's not going to eat the garlic. If he takes a neder that, I don't know, think of an example.
He's always going to call his mother a Mother's Day.
No, that's you have to do.
No, but I mean, I just have to. I mean, it's not clear here that the neder is good or bad or whatever.
Right, like, but if he takes a neder that really does affect his parents, so then in the chidami, even the chachamim agree with Rabbi Eliezer that can be a petach.
Gam l'tov v'gam l'ra, right. Rak l'ra.
No, that's if he now wants to get out of this neder. If he now wants to get out of this ned there,
he said he's going
to they
call
can say to him, well, you know, they go to him, they say, wait, when you said you knew you were never going to eat your mother's cooking, did you realize that you were going to be hungry? Of course he realized he was going to be hungry. Did you realize this was, you know, going to like affect the family dynamic? Of course he knew this, right? Did you realize how much this is an affront to kibud av v'im? If you had thought about kibud av v'im, would any reasonable person have done
it? It's probably not infrequent, actually, not that one, Bali Tshuva, but actually of religious families, let's say a kid, you know, let's say in America, it's more common than we hear, who, you know, come to yeshiva and then they come back and they take upon themselves additional chumrot and they come back and they want to come live in their parents' house and all of a sudden their kashrut isn't good enough for them. It's not Bali Tshuva.
So what does the sugi mean here? What does the Mishnah mean here? So what does it mean when Rabbi Eliezer says, "Potchim b'kibud avaim"? So what does he mean? The presumption is, or let's say it opposite. Why did the Chachamim say this is not a good petach? Well, there's like a plausibility factor. Somebody who's going to take a neder like this, and you say to him, oh, had you known that this was going to be a violation of kibud av v'im, would you have taken it? Who's going to answer yes to that? Who's going to go to the Bet Din and admit that they would have taken it? So everybody's going to say they wouldn't have taken the neder had they understood the consequences for kibud av v'im. So therefore, since everybody's going to say that, there's two types of people that are going to say that. That I would have never taken the neder had I fully understood the kibud av v'im aspects. So there's two types of people that are going to say that. People who sincerely now regret the consequences for kibud av v'im, and people that don't care 2 cents about kibud av v'im, but are embarrassed to admit that in the Beis Din. So the Chachamim say, this is not, the mechanics don't work. This is not a legitimate petach, because no one is going to freely admit that they would have taken the neder anyway.
Don't we assume that people aren't lying to us?
No. No. We don't.
So is that a call for anything they have to admit that they have to sin with?
So that's the next question in the Gemara. So what would it mean to say, Kavod HaMakom? Who would be prepared to say, oh, I knew I would have taken this neder, even though I know it's a front HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So what's the plausibility? And here we're talking about normal people who are within the realm of Torah and mitzvot. But
there's a difference though between Kavod HaMakom and Kavod HaMed. Kavod HaMakom, everybody has a different way of doing kavod v'makom. Kibud av v'im, it's very simple. It's like, okay, this is I don't think this is a threat to my parents. So comes along, my parents say, no, this is a threat. Comes along, my big brother says, no, this is an affront. Like, there's
okay,
a way
so,
to prove.
Hold on. Let's, we got to finish the Mishnah before we... right. So the Chachamim say it's not a... But Rabbi Eliezer says no. Rabbi Eliezer says maybe there is somebody who would say I would have taken this neder even though I know it's an affront. So therefore, it is plausible when he says, when the person says, when the person answers the petach, you know, the petach, you know, think of it metaphorically. Chazal, the Chachamim open, the Chacham opens the door for you to sneak out of the neder and you can either walk through or not.
Missing in what you're saying, that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you could say, you know, it doesn't mean that nobody would say that, because you could say, if I had known that my parents would have been, I didn't know this neder would have put them over the top. You're saying if they...
No, but this is nothing. The parents are completely unaware of this. Get this through your head.
But not the quite Rashi. I mean,
the parents are completely... No, and it's the potential that it will cause shame to the parents. Right? But again, I think as Shalom said, it's correct. Even if the parents are dead... Right, that's, it reflects badly on the parents. But in a case where it does affect the parents, where you take the neder against your mother's home cooking,
I'm saying something in between.
What's in between?
What's in between is it's not about, it doesn't affect them directly. You asked me, I took this neder upon myself. Turns out, if I had known that this taking on these neders would make me look like a
bad
addict,
guy, yeah.
Then I wouldn't have done it. But I didn't know. I thought this was a reasonable amount of neder to take. And turns out that my parents thought this was made them look bad. I didn't know. It's not that I wouldn't have done kibbutz hafeim, but I didn't know this was considered.
I'm not sure what's the difference between A, Aleph, and Bet.
I think it's very significant.
So Beseder, but that's Rabbi Eliezer.
Right.
So you're justifying Rabbi Eliezer's point of view. Yeah. Unfortunately, Rabbi Eliezer is not, we don't paskin like him, you're justifying Rabbi Eliezer's point of view. So Rabbi Eliezer says people would, since somebody would say, yeah, I would have taken the neder anyway, then the people who say I would not have taken the neder had I fully considered it can walk through that petach out of there and get out of there and get out of their neder.
The only reason they would be going for petach is because whatever the neder they took is now disturbing them.
Beseder, but if you go to the Bet Din and say, I want out of this neder. So then Betin says,
I'm never going to eat meat again. I'm going to be a vegetarian. And then, you know.
And you say, my doctor tells me the healthiest thing is to eat a lot of red meat.
I need meat.
Right?
What am I going to do?
Right. The alternative medicine comes up with something else.
Well, that's probably a better reason.
Yeah, fat is good for you.
No, so, but if you go to Betin, you say, I took a neder against meat. And they say, well, you know, did your doctors tell you you should add a lot of iron to your diet? And you say, no, 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 doctors say I'm fine. Okay. Is it because this has made life very difficult for your wife? She has to cook you a separate dinner every night? No, no, that's not it. My wife's happy to serve me whatever I want. Well, is it because of kibbutz hafeim? Because now you're one of these neder guys and it reflects badly on your parents? Would you have taken the neder... if you knew it reflected badly on your parents? He says, yeah, I don't care about my parents so much. Well, you're not a good guy. We're not gonna give you chosn Torah.
But
you're being honest, and so the Chachamim, their hands are tied. They cannot get you out of this neder. You can't be matir every single neder.
But his point is very simple. It's like, if you're not looking to get out of the neder, then what are you doing it based in the first place?
You want to get out of the neder, but it's not just like going to the Misrata Rishui and filling out a form. The mechanics have to work. You go to the, it's not like Erev Rosh Hashanah. Mutalach, mutalach, mutalach. It's, you have to go. There has to be a petach. There has to be something on which they can create an opening to allow you out of the neder. And if you don't give them an opening, so then you are stuck. You are still bound by your neder. And if you violate the neder, every time you violate the neder, you're over.
So they can always fall back on Hamakom.
No, so well, that's a good, but we don't pasken that way. But that's why the Rishonim read Hamakom as a kind of Havamim. Yeah, so if you're going to let them off for Kibbutz Hafeim, let them off for, and then they'll never be Nedarim. Right? Because then every neder has this opening. Right? So the second part of the Mishnah, Va'odam Rabbi Eliezer, Potchin ben Nolad. Nolad? What's a Nolad?
Can you,
a new situation, the circumstances change. V'chachamim osrin. Ketzad. Amar, konam shani nehene le'ish ploni. Now this is the phrase this is how a neder is phrased. Konam means, I accept it upon myself as if it's usur, like a korban. What is the etymology of the word konam?
I think it's like there's some of those words for nederim that are like not made up, but they were like made up for the sake of nederim. They didn't have other uses. I remember in Kahati.
You wrote about this, didn't you?
Konam, no. But I think I remember in Kahati's introduction to nederim, he talked about some of these terms we use.
They were synonyms.
Synonyms that were specifically.
Right. Or they were kino, they were nicknames. Yeah, right. So konam means like I. Konam sha'ani nehene le'ish ploni. There's some girsot that read it sha'ani, but it's kind of like a double negative, like a pox on me if I should get any benefit from ploni. Sha'ani nehene le'ish ploni means that I should not get any benefit from him. Meaning I am taking a neder, Ruvain, I won't get any benefit or pleasure or use out of him. The Gemara explains what are the parameters of hana'a. But then it turns out that ploni nase sofer. You live in a place, everybody needs a sofer. The Gemara says that every town needs, there's certain occupations every town needs to have. You need to have, what line of work are you in, sir?
Zikwan.
Blood letters. And you need to have a malame tinok, you need to have a sofer. What the sofer here means, whether it means a sofer stam, or a sofer might mean like the scribe, the person you go to when you need to have a document written, or it might mean, a sofer might also mean a teacher, but somebody that teaches children to read. Not a teacher teaches like, you know.
It wouldn't mean like an historian, like the person who just records all the stuff.
No, that's a later use of the term. That's a lady who said. So anyway, the point is that this person functions in your little town, you know, as the sole occupier of this
notary,
this profession, and you need to make use of him. O shehaya masi et bno va'amar ilu hayiti yodea shehu nase sofer. O shehaya masi et bno bikarov. If I'd known he was making a wedding, why is that relevant that he's making a wedding?
Marrying your daughter.
Oh, so you'd think that'd be like a good pshat. Like, I have a daughter and he has a son. So but you just want to go to the wedding. You know, you go to a wedding. Oi, what do they serve at weddings these days?
They serve at weddings.
They had roast beef. It was delicious.
Yeah. I didn't eat. I was nauseous.
You were not supposed to eat. You had to pay for everything.
Well, you know, some people don't show up. So
yeah. But
what
they
wedding had, were you guys at?
At his wedding. He made a wedding last week. Mazel tov. Right, not his wedding, his son's wedding, over there in Moshavora. They had roast beef. I love that when they called me. So had I, you know, so like if I'd taken a neder against him, I wouldn't have been able to go to the wedding and eat the roast beef. So
that's a reason.
So it's a type of hano. So, but this is no lot. When I took the neder, he wasn't a sofer. When I took the neder, he wasn't making a wedding.
What's the connection between
They're two different examples.
Yeah, but like everybody understands that you need a sofa. You can't like buy or sell the house or
that's
rent.
Fine.
But you don't have to go to the wedding.
No,
it's not bad. Like an
important no, need. So one is a more pressing need and one is a more gashmi need.
But that's like
no,
everything.
But it's not. Like,
no, maybe it's I promise I'll never have enough from you both, but I didn't know that you're giving away
but
candy.
Also, like, remember,
it's not a gashmi. Maybe like you want to go to this wedding because you don't have food in the house. And it's
in all cases, food. In a little town, remember the wedding scene in Fiddler? In a little town, you made a wedding. Who was invited to the wedding?
Everybody.
The town.
No, I
so you
that.
Don't want to be the only guy that's.
So what does
the
netter mean? I mean, everything
that's
is
no. No, that, so Rabbi Eliezer says that these are examples of nola. The circumstances
no,
change.
The
so you say, so listen.
Yes.
So this is the. Look, I don't mind. Everybody can come to the shir and you can sleep through it. You can do whatever you want, right? But if you want to read the mission in advance, so you know what's going to say at the end, so then you can have an opinion. Right? So so these are examples of nolad. One is a more noble and one is a less noble, but they're both examples where the circumstances changed. And had I known that the circumstances would have changed, I might not have taken a ned there. Not to get hano from this guy. Rabbi Eliezer says that is a petach v'matir the neder. Konam le bayit ze she'ani nichnas. I take a neder, I won't walk into this building. V'nase beit hakneset. And then that building becomes a shul. And now you have a different cause to want to go into that building. Omer, ilu hayiti yodea shehu nase beit kneset, lo hayiti noder. Had I known that this was going to become the shul, I wouldn't have taken a neder against walking into it. Rabbi Eliezer, matir v'chachamim osrin.
What? What would be the justification to make it osir?
No, they're osir using it as a petach. They say this is not a sufficient petach to allow him to get off the...
There's no windows in the future.
Right. So what that will do next week.
You can't use the fact that the circumstance changes as a petach.
Look at the Mishnah on Samech Hey Omid Beis. The first Mishnah, about 10 lines down. V'od amar Rabbi Meir potchin lo mina katuv shebatorah. V'omrim lo ilu hayita yodeya shata over al lo tikom v'lo titor. Had you known... You're angry at so-and-so. So you take a neder, I'm going to get revenge against you. And then you settle down, you calm down, you go to Beis Din to make Ataras Nedarim, and they say to him, if you had known that taking revenge is Osir Min HaTorah, it's against a posuk, so that can be a petach. How is that different than our case about Kavod HaMakom?
Mm-hmm. That can will you make a neder against Hebrew Torah?
Well, that we'll talk about next week.